You didn't even send it to you. I have you in my contacts, but I don't know.
Right. So we're up to Tofresh Ayin Aleph. We got up to Sif Dalid. Mile Ka'ara Shemen Vehikifa Psilos. So he fills up a bowl full of oil, and he's got on the periphery, on the round outside, he's got plenty of wicks. And now the Mechaber wants to address the following question. Is this a Madura or is it multiple Neros? Because if it's Madura, then it's Pasul. And you're not even Yotze one. So the Mechaber says it depends. Im Kafaleha Kli, if this open bowl has a cover on it, which separates each of the psilos, and maybe we're going to offer another possibility of separating the psilos, even without a kli, but now he's talking about kofale kli. Now, again, the issue is that we have to separate each one of the wicks. So he says, if you successfully separated the wicks, so you have a separate ner for each one of the wicks. It's called psila ola b'shvil ner echad. We can count each one of these wicks as a separate ner. But lo kaf olel kli, if all these wicks that are swimming in the same oil are going to connect, and you'll have one flame that is a product of all these different wicks, is an afil ner echad eino ola fishu kimidura. Then it becomes like one large fire made of many different wicks, and that's posel. That doesn't even count for one single ner. Now, there's a very important Mishnah Berurah here, number Yud Gimel, which is the first of the wide lines in my edition. And he says the following, that since he covers the container, therefore he separates the psilos. Vidafka, please, this is where you have to pay attention. Vidafka kshekafafa. The achakach hidlik. He covered this bowl of oil, separating, as it were, all the psilos before the hadlaka. Avalim hidlik, if he hadn't covered it, and he went ahead and he was madlik, the achakach kofa, and afterwards he covered it, sorech lechabos ulechasos, he's got to put out the candles and start again, covering it before he does the hadlaka. And this statement of the Mishnah Berurah's qualification is based on the principle called Hadlakos of Mitzvah. That everything depends upon the act of Hadlaka. If at the moment of Hadlaka we have separate psilos, then it was never a Madura. But if it was connected, and then he physically separates these fires, one from the other, since at the time that he lit the Nair, it was a Madura, then it never can become kosher later, even though now you look at it subsequently, it looks perfect. It's many different wicks that are separated, but he doesn't have hadlaka, so he has to put it out and light it again. Now the interesting question would be, what happens if a person lights his Nair in a kara, in this container, this receptacle of oil, and then somebody comes along and adds his own wick into the same oil and makes it into a Madura? So Shimon, who came along second, he certainly is not Yotzei the Mitzvah Ner Chanukah, because at the moment that he lit it, it was a Madura. But Reuven, on the other hand, had lit it before Shimon came along. So for one split second, at the moment, the critical moment of the Hadlaka, Reuven's Hadlaka was a Hadlaka Ksher of one single Ner. The fact that Shimon then converts it into Madura, that doesn't undermine Reuven's Mitzvah. However, there are some posts who want to say that if they were working in cahoots, and they knew from the get-go that one after the other, Bazeh, Herzeh, first Reuven's going to light in that same Kara, and then Shimon's going to light in that same Kara, etc. It's going to become a Madura. Then it could be, that's like a case where you light the Nair, and you know there's a wind that's going to blow out the Nair. It's not that all of a sudden, from nowhere, a wind comes and blows out your Nair. It was already predictable in the situation, in the location where you lit the Nair. Here also, it's predictable because you made up with Shimon that he would light his candle, his wick, in the same Kar of Shemen immediately after yours. So from the get-go, we could already predict that it's going to be a Madura. But again, in general, if Shimon was not working in cahoots with Reuven, and Shimon decided that he's going to use the same kara and put in a wick and make it into a mandura, that would not undermine Reuven's mitzvah, because at the time it was okay. Now, what I want to study with you is a Mishnah Brura in number Yudches, which would be about four lines up before the end of the page. Now, in order to appreciate this Mishnah Brura, what we need to do is we have to read the Ramah. So the Ramah, which is on line 5, says, "Lachein yesh li zar lahamid aneros b'shura shavu v'lo b'igul." He says that there are two possibilities as to how you're going to line up your candles. And he wants you to line them up in a row, going from left to right. He doesn't want you to line them up in a circle. The reason for that is the Havi Kimidura. Again, it's not yet a Madura, but it looks like a Madura. And in this case, we want to make sure that you're not going to light a Madura. And at this point, the Mishnah Brura wants to know, what about a case where there are separations between one wick and the other? And even if they're situated in a circle formation, but nevertheless, they are separate. And that's called pamotos. If you take a look at the next line in the Ramah, he says, "Umutu lahadlik bepamotos shekar lampa." So the Mishnah Berurah is going to tell us in Nabi Yudches that here, even though he's lighting his candles in a circular formation, but nevertheless, each candle is situated in its own receptacle. That's called pamutos. How would you call a pamuta in English? What's the word in English for that which holds the oil in a circle? Anyway, it's a receptacle, so it has its own walls, so to speak. So now each wick is separate from another wick, and on top, to boot, you have a mechitza, because the walls of the pamuta separate one wick from the next wick. Do you follow the two pluses over here? Or let's call it a double havdalah, a double separation from one wick to the next. On the one hand, each wick is in its own receptacle, even though it's drawing from a common source of oil. And the second point is that each wick has a wall around it, so to speak. It's encircled by the pamuta itself. So if you look in the Mishnah Brura on Nabi Yudches, he says the following: "Mashma miloshon zed detarti ba'inon." It seems that in order to allow this circular kind of Chanukiah, you need to fulfill two conditions. Number one, sheyu gamkein muvdolim akonim echad mivelavad mimashi yesh l'kol echad mechitza b'fnei atzma. In other words, each one of these kanim means the branches of the Chanukiah, of the menorah, is separated, and not only that, the oil is placed for each wick in its own kanim, and therefore there's mechitza between one and the other. So once you have these two checked off, then it's such a great havdalah that we're not going to worry about the fact that it might come to become a mandura. So basically, if I would ask you halacha lemaisa, according to the Mishnah Berurah's presentation, based on this mechaber, would you be allowed to have a circular menorah? And the answer is yes. Why? Because you have two conditions. Number one, each wick is separated, and number two, each wick is protected by a kana, by the outer lip, or surrounding barzel, you know, the metal that surrounds the wick. And that's a havdalah that has two parts to it. Now, is there a possibility of lighting a menorah with many different wicks, and there's no kli on top of the wicks, no kli separating the wicks? So here, the Mishnah Berurah quotes a sheet of the Tur, and we'll see it inside in just a minute. Right now I know it by heart, so I don't want to lose it. The Tur is going to be of the opinion that if you separate one wick from the other by a distance, even though there's no kli that covering that separates it. Oh, here it is. It's number Tes Zayin, which in the Mishnah Berurah you count it from the bottom 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up. He says, and here he's quoting the Shita of the Tur. Many poskim accepted the Shita that if Yesh Hefsek Mechitza Bein Ner Lener Karochav Etzba Beinayim Mutar Afilu Im Lo Kafa Lam Kli. That if you separate one wick from the other, a shear, a minimum amount called ki etzba, the size of a finger, then even though there's no kli on top that separates physically one wick from the other, that's enough to achieve this goal. So you don't necessarily absolutely need the covering of the kli if there's a physical distance separation between one and the other. That seems to be enough. If you take a look in the Shaar Tzion of Chaf Aleph, he gives you a list of various poskim that accepted that shita. Then the Rama adds on the bottom line on top, he says, "V'izaru, make sure k'sha'osim neros, when you set up your candles, afilu b'shava, even if they're made of wax, she'ein l'dabkon b'yachad uladlikam, there should be no physical connection between the two candles." Now, in the case of Shava, you might say that even if the two candles that are made of wax touch each other, but they only touch each other, the point of contact is in the wax. The wicks themselves on the top are separated, so maybe that would be okay. But the answer is no. We're not going to accept that. It's Havi Kimidura. Once again, in order to undermine Midura, we have to make sure that each wick is separated from the other wick. And in this case, they're actually combined. So the source of the oil in the case of a wax candle is the wax itself. And now the wax is connected one candle to the other, that makes it equal to one bowl of oil. And there's nothing separating the wicks one from the other. And therefore it's considered a madura. The next line in the Rambam, which is on the next page on Kufla Mintes, makes no sense whatsoever.
I don't understand. The Torah said, as long as there's a distance between the wicks, presumably it's in the same oil. So how's that any different than the two wax candles that are together? But the
so if you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah number Tes Zayin, which we read before, that's about seven lines up from the bottom.
Yeah.
He says, "Im yesh hefsek mechitza beiner lener ukerochav etzba beinehem." It sounds like he's requiring two things: a separation and a mechitza. And if that be the case, then the case of Neros Shava.
That's the Torah that says that.
I think so. I can't promise you, but I think he doesn't quote any source for it. But I think it's the Torah. If we had more time, we'd go through the Torah. I just want to get through the Mishnah Berurah.
Sorry.
So that in the case of two wax candles that are actually in contact one with the other, there's no mechitza beinayim. So you may have one condition in which you separate the wicks, maybe the wick is separated by an etzba, but nevertheless there's no mechitza beinayim because we treat and we define the wax as oil. So there's no real separation there because all the oil, so to speak, is connected. All the wax candles are connected. And on the top of the next page, the Rambam says something which is totally unintelligible. I mean, something that's beyond our understanding. He says that this halacha of not connecting two wicks applies even to Ner Shabbos. If you take a look at this very long bir halacha, he tries to make some sense out of this. Because he says, Eino Kein, on the third, he says, V'Shabbos Yontem Mitzvah Lasos Kruchim. He says that in regard to Ner Shabbos, if you connect different wicks in order to get a real beautiful flame that's very intense, Adarava, that enhances the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos. Where does it say in the halacha of Ner Shabbos that you want to have one flame separate to the oil and another flame separate, but they have to be two separate things? On the contrary, we want to make it a very intense light. So halfway through this Bir Halacha, he tries to make an attempt to make sense out of this Rambam, and he quotes a Prima Gadim, And then he says, Nira de Chaser Kan Prat Echad. He says that you have to add something to the reading of this Ramah that was left out. Dahainu Kshemedamkin Osan Achrad Lakosam Achal Yidei Zemis Chamamos Vinoflos. He says that once you light the candles, if you connect two wicks, or let's say in the case of a wax candle, if you connect two wax candles that are lit, you have such an intense heat that mischamos v'noflos. I think what he means to say is that the wax is going to melt, and that's not going to add, that's not going to achieve any stability to the nair. You want this nair to last so that an hour later you can eat your suda to the illumination of the nair. We're up now to number he. The Mechaber says, Ner Chanukah Meidicha al Pesach HaSomach L'Shus HaRav Mibachutz. Where is the location for Ner Chanukah? That's going to be outside his house, close to the open public area. And it seems that that requirement applies to the Hadlok itself, because we're saying now that Hadlok Osa Mitzvah. So at the time of Hadlok, you've already set up your candle in the place where you have to set it up. Later on, the Mechaber is going to say, what if it's a dangerous situation if he lights it outside? Then the halach is going to change entirely. But now, we're talking about a case where there's no danger. And keep in mind, the Mechaber is talking bizman hazeh. He's addressing, you know, Tzfat or Cairo of 1500. And even though it's way beyond the takana of Mishas Sakana V'elach, nevertheless, if it's not an actual Shas Sakana, then we go back to the original, you know, pristine mitzvah, the ideal mitzvah Ner Chanukah, which requires Pesach Beiso Mibachutz. Now, what's Pesach Beiso? He says it's a Pesach that's Somach Lushus Arabin. Again, that's going to be problematic if you live on the second floor. But right now he's talking about a person who lives on ground floor, and the opening of his house opens up, spills into a public area. That's where he should light the candle. Exactly whether he should light on the left side or the right side, how high it should be, how low it should be, that we're going to get to in Sif Zion. But in Sif Hey, we're talking about the closeness and proximity to Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. Now, what happens in a case where you have many houses that spill into a common courtyard? That's called a chatzer. And that's not the case here at the beginning of Sif Hey, that's the case at the end of Sif Hey. Right now, he's addressing the case where you have a private house and the door of your private house connects your private house with the Rishus HaRavim. So place the candle outside of your door, right into the Rishus HaRavim. Okay. Now, im habayis pasuch Rishus HaRavim meinichal pischo, and you have no problem, because your house is contiguous to the public area, so that's where you're going to light it outside. However, the yesh chatzer lifnei habayis, what happens if your house, if you're going from your house outside, you spill into a chatzer, a courtyard? And let's assume there are many people who have houses, let's say circle a cul-de-sac that leads into a common chatzer. Then he says, don't put your Ner Chanukah at the entrance to your house, because that's not connected to a Rosh Hashanah Rabbin, but rather meinich al Pesach haChatzer. He should go all the way out to the entry into the Chatzer. For example, in our apartment buildings, you enter into the house, and that's a common place. And then you go up to your house, which might be on the second floor, wherever it's located, or even if it's on the first floor, but it, the opening of your house doesn't go into Rosh Hashanah Rabbin. So therefore, you have to go all the way out to the chatzer, and you have to light it bePesach haChatzer. And the Mishnah Berurah points out here in the Bir Halacha that this is against Rashi. Rashi holds that you should always, always, absolutely put your candle bePesach haBayis miBachutz, even if it spills into a chatzer, which is common to other people. Rashi wants to be critical that when the spectator sees your ner, he knows exactly which house that ner belongs to. If you light bePesach haChatzer, Rashi Shita is, then there's no way that you can identify whose ner Chanukah is, because there's so many people who share that common courtyard. But Tosis disagrees. Tosis Shita is that the critical element here is to get Rishus HaRavim. I don't care whether people will know whose there it is, whether it belongs to Reuven or to Shimon or to Levi. The main thing is that for purposes of achieving Pirsumei Nisa, the candle be out there in the entryway, at the entryway, the crossroads to Rishus Arabim, and that's going to be what's called the Pesach HaChotzer. So this is very relevant to contemporary life. This is a case that comes up over and over again. Where to light your Ner Chanukah? Should you light it outside your house, or should you light it outside of the Chotzer? That Chotzer which is common to everyone. And as long as the Rambam doesn't argue, it seems that he would agree, tacitly agree, to what says here in the Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber says it's got to be the Pesach HaChotzer, which means that we accept the sheet of Tosfos against Rashi, and we have to. And what's critical is that the Ner be in the Rosh Hashanah. However, now we have two exceptions. One exception is going to be the case of Dar Ba'aliyah, where he lives on a higher floor. And the Mechaber says, "Ein lo pesa pasul b'shusarab." When you go out of your door on the second floor, you're not going to end up in the public area. And therefore, he should find a window where if he places his candle in that window, it's a window that's chalon hasamach l'shusarabim, so that people who are walking in the public area can see his Ner Chanukah. Now, the Mechaber doesn't address the following scenario. Let's say I live on the second floor and I don't have such a chalon. Or let's say I live on the 10th floor of a major skyscraper, or on the 40th floor, on the 100th floor, and nobody in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim can see from the bottom, because we're going to see later on that the highest amount that they can see is 20 Amma. You're above 20 Amma. So in that case, where should you light your Ner Chanukah? You can't get it, you know, even in view of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim because it's so high up, or alternatively, you don't even have a window. So frankly speaking, I don't know the answer to that question. And the Mishnah Berurah in the Bir Halacha doesn't address this question. It sounds like, in this case, he has no Pirsumei Nisa. Should he drop the ball on Ner Chanukah? So perhaps, again, this is just Berzon talking, I'm just speculating, that this comes under the next line, and the next case of an impossibility of putting your Ner close to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. And that's called Shasa Sakana. What happens if there's no possibility of achieving Pirsum HaNes? You'll endanger your life or the life of your family as well if you place it outside in the public area. So the Mechaber paskins that since he's not allowed to fulfill the mitzvah the way it was originally formulated, the ideal way, is nevertheless he can fulfill the mitzvah. Nichal Shulchan Avedayo, he can place it inside his house on his table. And perhaps we could use this to answer our other question: what happens if you live very, very high up, or you live in a place where there are no windows, for example, if you have windows, they don't face the public area. In such a case, maybe you should do the best you possibly can and just light the candle on your table. You don't have to drop the ball on Mitzvah's Ner Chanukah, but now you shift into a different mode of Ner Chanukah, where the Pirsum HaNes is not on the outside, but rather on the inside. So there are two scenarios where we have to shift the Pirsum HaNes to the inside of the house. One is where it's a Shas Sakana and you can't possibly light it on the outside without endangering the lives of your family. Number two, where you simply have no place that would expose the Ner to the view of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, of those people who go into the public territory. So now we have to shift the Ner Chanukah inside the house. Now it's interesting to me that if I were to give a title to Sif Hay, it would be, what is the proper location for lighting your Chanukah candles? Where should you light it? And we went through all the details. All of a sudden, in the middle of this very Sif, the title, the subject changes, and I'm very confused about this. That's not usually the way the Shulchan Aruch presents his halachas. V'tzorech ner acher l'shtamish li'oro. Now the question, the title of this discussion is, are you allowed to benefit for personal usage from the light of the Ner Chanukah? And the answer is that the only way you can do so is if you light another additional Ner, and that additional Ner is not a Ner Chanukah, so it has no status of a Ner Chanukah. And here I want you to take a look at the Bir Alocha, V'tzarech Ner Acher L'shtamish Li'oro. I'm going to give you a minute to find it. It's in this page, it's about, shall I say, a little bit more than 10 lines up from the bottom. You have it? Mm-hmm. He says the following, that Rashi interprets, this is a statement of Rava on Daf Chaf Alpha in Beis, that you need an extra Ner, we call it the Shamash, Mishum Hekera. What does that mean, Hekera? That right, that the spectator can realize that he's not lighting it for his own purposes, but rather for the sake of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Shafil lo yirtza klal l'shtamish. He has no intention to enjoy and use the Ner Chanukah for his purposes. Well, maybe he's allowed to do so, but nevertheless, he needs another Ner. Not to be matir, to allow and permit him to use the Ner, but rather in order to set up a Hekera so that people realize that he's lighting the second candle for the sake of the mitzvah. Al yidei ze min kar shan nera rishon hu l'shem sha, excuse me, sheha ha nera, wait, this is a little complicated. Al yidei ze min kar shan nera rishon hu l'shem mitzvah.
In the car.
Right, the first one from that's for the mitzvah.
The second. Heck here. Then yeah. We know that the first candle is the second mitzvah.
This doesn't make any sense to me. I'll be honest with you. This is not the way I learned this sugya. I'm pretty sure I saw it in many, many mefarshim. Okay. It's not the Ner Rishon that's L'Shem Mitzvah. It's the Ner Sheni that's L'Shem Mitzvah. The Ner Rishon is the Shamash, which is not L'Shem Mitzvah. And now he has enough light and people understand that if he's lighting a second candle, it must be the second candle is L'Shem Mitzvah. So I don't know, honestly, I don't know how to make any sense out of this Bir Alocha. And he goes on to say that if he doesn't have the extra Ner, and especially if you are lighting inside your house, which we gave two scenarios in which you might want to light inside your house, is ha'omer, ha'roi yomer, l'tzarko edlika, that he's lighting it for his own purposes, to enhance his suda, to light up his meal. He's not lighting it as a Ner mitzvah. Now he, the Mishnah Berurah, has a big chiddush. He wants to say that if you light outside your house, you don't need a shamash. Why? Because there it's clear to everyone that he's lighting it as a ner mitzvah. Nobody lights a ner l'tzarko inside his house. Achen, he says, minag ha'olam, v'chein minag rabosenu. He says, our rabbis have the tradition, the custom, the chol ner chanukah mudlekes v'toch habayis, tzarech ner acheres, afilo hayitzarech litashmish shaloyomu litzarkad liko. Just one second, again I have trouble with the language here. Again, if he's putting it outside, is ain't sark near a cheres over ain't abolish tamish li ora laser tashchein minoga ora achein minoga rabosenu. So I thought he was referring to even if he lights on the outside. But then he says, so if he's lighting it on the outside, he doesn't need a ner acheres. So what's the chiddush of our mina? The chol ner chanukah mudlekes b'toch habayis. Ah, I see. He's wondering what happens in a case where he's lighting his Ner Chanukah on the inside, but not on the shulchan, not on his dining table. And if that be the case, then he's not really lighting up, illuminating his dining room. He's lighting, let's say, near the window, inside the house. He doesn't need a Ner Acheres, because here he already has the Heker. If he was lighting it for the sake of his enjoyment, he would have lit it on his shulchan. But he says our minhag is not like that, that any hadlaka inside requires a shamash, a ner acheres, v'chein kasav ha-me'iri. But again, he still sticks to his guns, that if he lights on the outside of his house, he doesn't need a ner acheres.
But yet you see today, people light the shamash.
Correct. So I don't know, it's very strange, because you see what he says, you can underline three words there. Why did he add those three words? I would have left out those three words. to indicate that b'chol ner Chanukah, no matter where he's lighting it, even on the outside, you need a ner acheres. So it seems like the Mishnah Berurah is only willing to go as far as what we call pirsum hanes inside. There we're going to be very careful that he adds another ner, because once it's on the inside of the house, it might in some way enhance the illumination that he needs. But ener chinami, as far as the ner outside the house is concerned, there it's min kar milsa, it's very clear to anyone that he's lighting it as a ner mitzvah. And here in chinami, there's no minute to add a shamash.
So how come today they do it? Is there a reason?
You have to keep in mind that Mishnah Berurah was almost 100 years ago.
Nobody lit outside.
I mean, the Mishnah Berurah died in the year 1930. And he probably wrote this in 1920 or even earlier than that. So at that time, they were lighting on the inside of the house. The minute to light outside of the house, which is an absolutely popular minhag today, especially here in Eretz Yisrael.
No, but so based upon the time, they weren't lighting outside. And he's saying, but if you light outside, you don't really need,
you don't need a shamash.
So why did people, when I guess...
But once they shifted the minhag, you know, to light on the outside, they considered that the Ner Chanukah. Now we have a halacha that you need a Ner Acheres, so they attached this halacha of Ner Acheres to the Ner Chanukah that was common in those days, without the original reason for Tzarech L'Ner Acheres. The pressing, compelling reason for Ner Acheres is no longer applicable in our mode of hadlaka outside, but nevertheless, we didn't want to drop this halacha, so now we're going to apply it to the only, or the most common mode of hadlaka, which is outside the house, and we're going to require a shamash. But again, if you only had the bir halacha, you'd come to the conclusion that when you're lighting on the outside, you don't need an extra Ner Acheres. But the real McCoy, again, in terms of this Mishnah Berurah, this Bir Aloch, is that he's saying that the Sheni, the Ner Sheni, is going to be the Shamash. That I find very difficult. Adarav, if you want a Keri, you got to set up the Keri before you light the candle. Now you're saying that the Ner Sheni is the second candle. When the Ner Sheni is meant to supply and provide a heker for the Ner Rishon, which means at the time that you lit the Ner Rishon, you didn't have this hekerah. So that's appellate to me. It's like the case that we discussed before of separating the wicks, and we said that separation of the wicks has to take place, has to be engraved in stone at the time of the Adlaka. You can't separate the wicks after the Adlaka, because Adlaka also mitzvah. So here too, you can't add a Ner Acheres for Hekera after you lit the first Ner. So that line in the Bir Halacha defies my understanding. You know, I can only do the best job that I can, and when I don't understand, I'm honest and I tell you I don't understand. Now, if we go back to the Mechaber for a second,
you're saying you don't like the Shamash first. You like the Ner Mitzvah first.
But where's Hekera? That's what I'm wondering. If there's a halacha of Hekera, just like we saw earlier with Madura, you know, you have to make sure that it's not a Madura at the time of Adlaka. You can't separate the wicks after you lit it.
Right.
Here too, if there's a requirement of Hekera, you can't set up the Hekera provided after the Adlaka, because then at the time of Adlaka, you had no Hekera. But the only thing I'd like to say here, again, what I'm telling you is B'doch HaGadol, is if you go back to the Mechaber, maybe the Mishnah Berurah's comment is an addendum to the Mechaber. The Mechaber says, look at that. Again, we're talking about line 6. He says, Tzorech Ner Acheres Lihishtamish Li'oro. Now, what those words sound like is that the reason he needs a Ner Acheres is not for Hekera, but in order to allow him to use the Ner. Now, he can't get any benefit from a Ner Chanukah, as we're going to soon see later on, because we paskin also l'shtamesh li'ora, but there is a way that he could benefit if he has another Ner, because then we're allowed to say that he's benefiting from the other Ner.
That Ner is not Ner Chanukah.
Because that Ner is not a Ner Chanukah. Now, he can light that Ner as a second Ner. So the first Ner, at this point, he's not interested in using that Ner because the law is also l'shtamesh li'ora. Now he wants to know, well, you know what, he's frying his eggs here. He needs a little bit more light, so he lights another candle, and then we're allowed to suggest that his Hanah, the benefit that he's getting the Tashmish is from the second candle, which is not an Er Chanukah, and that he's allowed to do. Maybe here's where the Mishnah Berurah adds his comment that he could add the Shamash subsequent to his original Ner. He's not attaching it to our understanding based on Rashi of Hekera, because that would have to be Hekera B'Shas Adloka. He's attaching his comment to the Mechaber. The Mechaber says the reason for the Ner Acheres is not because of Hekera, but Kedei L'Shtamish Liora, to be Matir, that Hanukkah.
That doesn't satisfy the first candle.
What do you say?
That doesn't satisfy the first candle.
Well, no, again, he's not interested in using the first candle. A half hour. He's
not interested in using any of the candles.
No, I'm just saying. The Mechaber says, Lishtamish Leorah. Lishtamish Leorah means he is using the candle. He's frying his eggs.
The second one.
Oh, so what does he do? He's in a bind. He lit one candle so far, correct? And now that candle is an Er Chanukah and joins him for benefiting. Now he needs light for his eggs. So then Halacha says, Tzorech Ner Acheres. Let him light a second candle, which is devoid of the status of Ner Chanukah, and if he's allowed to benefit from it. So in this scenario, the way the Mechaber is explaining the second Ner, Eino Chinami, that could be the second Ner. Feltnish, there's nothing missing in this first candle, because we're not going with Rashi's Hekera business, we're going with Kedei Lahatir L'Shtamish Liora. And maybe the Mishnah Berurah's comment was an addendum to the Mechaber, not to Rashi. Again, it's very difficult to say that because the Bir Halacha is well aware of the Rashi. You know, he presents the Rashi. So presumably his comment about the extra Ner as the second candle was made in the context of Rashi. Not the way I wanted to suggest, but in the context of Rashi, I can't begin to understand how you can set up a Hekera after you lit the candle. Because after you lit the Ner, at the time that you lit the Ner Chanukah, there was no Hekera.
And he says in Chavdam, Lazos Heker Ludovar.
Who? The Mishnah Berurah? Yeah, because again, the Mishnah Berurah is interested in Rashi. But again, that comment is not relevant to the Shulchan Aruch, it's only relevant to Rashi.
Right.
That's why I say Bedochak, you know, whatever I told you, you know, just erase it from the record, but that's what I'm trying to suggest. Oh. Now, under what circumstances are you allowed to benefit from the Ner Chanukah even without adding a Ner Acheres? That's what the Mechaber adds now. The Yesh Medura, he has plenty of light in the room. Like, for example, in our reality, in our situation where there's plenty of electric lights, then there's no need to add a Shamash. V'yeno Tzarech Ner Acher. Now again, the Mishnah Berurah is really stuck with Rashi. So he says that there's no need for Heker, because why are you lighting this Ner when you have plenty of light in the room? The answer must be because it has Hekera. Right? Because I'm sorry, that it's clear that this is for the sake of the mitzvah. However, at one point, the Mishnah Berurah, oddly enough, interprets the Mechaber in a different light, pardon the pun, but in a different light, meaning it has nothing to do with Hekera. Take a look in Chaf Hei, when you have a Madura, he says, Yochel Ishtamish Lefaneha, in other words, you're allowed to have benefit from the Ner. Why? Because you have another great source of light. And then he jumps over to Rashi, Miyesh Hekera Shaner Shal Mitzvah.
What's Lefaneha?
What do you say?
Lefaneha.
Lufanel means in front of the Ner. Right? So you're frying your eggs in the presence of the Ner. There's no question that the Ner Chanukah is adding some element of illumination. But nevertheless, you're allowed to do it because you have other sources of light which are not classified as Ner Chanukah. So it seems to me that this Mishnah Berurah Chaf Hei should be read with an Iboy Seima in the middle, like an Inami. In other words, no matter which way you interpret the requirement of an extra Ner, in the case where he has a Madura, there's no need for an extra Ner. If you interpret it, number one, like the Mechaber, that's ought to be Matir Shtam Shuslufanel, then that you can do because you have a Madura. And if you're interpreting like Rashi, that you need the Ner Acheres for a Keira, you already have that Keira, which is supplied by the Madura. Now, at the end of this presentation, he says, "Ima ya adam chashu shein darko l'shtamish li'or hamedura sorech ner acher." apparently in Adam Chashuv would never use the light of a Madura. Madura was something that was considered like more the Amcha, you know, the second class citizens. You know, if you're in the higher, you know, you're a Feinschmecker, you wouldn't use the Madura, so you've lost, again, according to the Mechaber, the Shtamshus. You can't relate the Shtamshus to the Madura. He doesn't use the Madura. And you've lost the Heker, according to Rash. So again, as we said before, this only applies, just one second, if he's lighting on the inside of his house. Again, let's just review that. Oh, again, six lines up before the end of the Bir Halacha, v'nira dafka v'yinich al shulchano, or, as he says, anywhere within the house. If he's lighting it outside of his house, is eno tzarich l'ner acheres. He doesn't need an extra ner. Then he quotes the minhag that anywhere in his house, if he's lighting inside, he should add the shamash. And once again, I leave you with the following question: why does the Mechaber combine in one se'if two separate issues? There are two different titles over here. The first title is where to light the candles, and he's going to pick that up again in se'if vav, but somewhere wedged in the middle between hey and vav he talks about ner acheres, which again, according to the Mishnah Berurah, the ner acheres is because he's lighting inside the house. So it seems to me that what the Mechaber did here, again, pedagogically, you can evaluate it one way or the other, but once he mentioned that there's adloka inside the house, that's called Shas Sakon V'Elech, then he has to tell you that you have to add an extra ner, because he's going to use and benefit from the light inside his house, the light of the Ner Chanukah. He needs a matir, and that's the Ner Achra. You follow what I'm saying here? It's like the Mechaber goes off on a tangent, in a sense, to tell me about the Ner Acheres, which has to do with Hishtamshus and also Hishtamish Liora. We haven't even gotten to that yet in the Mechaber. But the reason why he's tempted to present this digression is because he's already mentioned the possibility, he validated the possibility of lighting a Ner Chanukah inside the house. If you're lighting inside the house, that's problematic. Right. And therefore, you add another ner.
Because he's already discussed in Aleph how many to light. So he's saying, by the way, even though what I told you before about how many to light, now you have to light another one.
Right. But again, why didn't he attach this to his discussion earlier about how many candles you should light? Yeah, or like alternative, why didn't he attach it later on when he gets to the discussion about whether you're allowed to benefit from the candles or not? Uh-huh. So I'm just suggesting that the breakthrough here is that now that he's presented that the validated the possibility of lighting inside the house, now I can explain to you why we need a Ner Acheres. Outside the house, you don't need a Ner Acheres. As I stated in the
Bureau. Who says he's an Adam Chashev?
Adam Chashev what?
Who decides he's an Adam Chashev?
I guess an Adam Chashev means anyone who in a particular society would not use this kind of a source of light. Again, it's hard for me to answer that question. I don't understand the whole sociology here. What's wrong with using a Madura? I don't know why that's associated with a lower etiquette segment or sector of society. I don't understand the sociology. It's totally foreign to me. You know, I would have said, if it was up to me, that as a fancy Feinschmecker, I wouldn't want to use a single mare, because then, you know, you have to start pouring oil. I think I told you guys, I once gave a Friday night Oneg lecture in Toronto, in Clanton Park, and my Bala bus had a campfire,
fireplace.
A fireplace. So I wasn't at all aware of the intense heat that was coming from this fireplace. And believe it or not, they had me stand in front of about 20 people right next to the fireplace. Midway through the lecture, I started climbing up. I jumped up to the ceiling. I thought my whole tush was on fire. You know what I'm saying? This is a true story. In fact, the host, he no longer lives in Canada, but he moved to Lakewood. But he's one of my best friends. You know, his first name is Ivan. I said, Ivan, why did you do this to me? And it's a beautiful fireplace. I don't know, it was very sophisticated, the technology. I don't know, it wasn't like, you know, logs of wood. Like, you didn't even see the logs. I don't know exactly how it worked, but it was hot. It was gas, okay, but it was very, very hot. So maybe in that case, you know, an Aram Chashev has to stay away from the hand, you know? Otherwise he jumps up to the ceiling. So now we're up to Sivvav. We're back to the question of where to locate your Ner Chanukah. Why is that so? Why is it important to lift it a little bit from the ground? So this is a halacha really that applies in Erevin, in Mechitzos, in Sukkah, that the ground halachically goes up to 3 tefachim. Anything within 3 tefachim in the low airspace is considered as if it's on the ground. And you take a look in the Mishnah Berurah, he says that Nabuchavav kol shalamata mishlosh kilu hinicho bekarka. It's as if, again, halachically he put it on the ground. And that's not a place for a Ner Chanukah.
Why not?
Okay. So I would have said the following, you know, people don't look on the ground. That's not where they're looking for a Ner Chanukah. And therefore there's no Pirsum HaNes. He says something totally different here. And he's quoting, I think, the Pri Chodesh. Let me just see who he's quoting. Oh, he's quoting the Bach. And he says the following, Ein Nikar Shebalabayis Hi Nicho Shom. In other words, a Baal HaBayis who's putting light out of his outside of his house, he's not going to put it on the ground. So somebody came along, I don't know exactly who this person was, but it's not the Baal HaBayis. So the tziruf, the connection, the link between the Ner Chanukah and the bayis has to be above the karka. And when we say it's above the karka, it's got to be a minimum of 3 tefachim above the karka. Now he quotes a Pri Chodesh. The Pri Chodesh claims that even though the Mechaber advocates and recommends placing the Ner above 3 tefachim, if b'dieved, you know, he only sees it as a recommendation, this is l'chatchil, the ideal way of fulfilling the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. But b'dieved, even if he puts it on the ground, says the Pri Chodesh, he was yotze. Again, if I were asked this question, you know, before the Pri Chodesh, I would have said he's not yotze at all, logically. Again, the Pri Chodesh is basing himself on the language, the formulation of the Mechaber. He says, "Meinicho lamala mishlosh tefachim." I would have said that that's an absolutely critical requirement. In fact, look at the next piece in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch then goes on and says, "Umitzvah anicho lamata me'asara tefachim." He shouldn't place it above the height of Asorah Tefachim. That I would say is only a mitzvah. But the ratio, when he opens up the Sifvav and he says, that might be not just a mitzvah, that's absolutely imperative, right? And critical. Okay, now, so what's the ideal place, let's go according to Pri Chodesh, to light the Ner Chanukah? It's from 3 tefachim all the way up to 10 tefachim. It's a very narrow, relatively narrow height area. It's only from 3 to 10. Now, why is it that we want it so low down? You know, Adrav, I would have said the higher the better, the more Pirsum HaNes you get from it. So this is the problem that the Mishnah Berurah addresses in Se'if Katan Chav Zayin. And he says the Iker Pirsum HaNes Tfei, that paradoxically, when it's low down, again not too low, but low, it expands and embellishes the Pirsum HaNes. That's counterintuitive. He says the Dover Asu Li'or Ein Derech Lanicha Kol Kach Lamata. He says that the lamps and the lights that we use to light up our place are usually not placed too low. Right? Like, for example, if you look at this room, the light is all the way on top. it's interesting because if you want a minimum amount of R, then you might want to put it on the floor as low down. So I don't know if you, but mostly, do you have what we call a Shabbos light, you know, in your bedroom or something like that? You know, you don't want to sleep in darkness. Usually, again, everyone will tell me exactly what you do, but our minhag in our house is to put it pretty low down.
We want it for reading.
Because on the table.
Or on a night table, but it should be the lower the better, because you're trying to, you know, you're trying to balance two conflicting tug of war kind of thing. Because on the one hand, you want some light in the room, you don't want to sleep in pitch darkness, but on the other hand, you don't want too much light in the room because you're going to sleep. So here, namuch means lowness is a plus. But in terms of your classical light to illuminate a room, then you would normally put it higher up. As an example, in our case, in our room here where we're sitting now. So therefore, if we want to get some sort of a hekera that he's not lighting it for his purposes, then you want to put it down a little bit lower. And that's below 10 tefachim. Once again, Rav Moshe, I'm very perplexed by this because we just finished saying in the Bir Halacha that these issues of Hekera only apply when you're lighting inside the house. Here we're talking about the ideal mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, which is outside the house. So clearly, he's not lighting for his own purposes. You know, let the light be higher up. But the answer is that we have lights even outside of our house, right? In fact, if you're ever trying to find someone's house in a residential area and it's dark, it's like impossible because you can't see the numbers on the house. So you know the guy lives on Fayward Avenue, but you know where is number 12 on Fayward? You know, you could ride around the block 50 times until you find number 12. So here, if somebody puts a light outside, you know, all of a sudden you see the number 12. Or alternatively, if somebody's climbing up steps in order to get into the house, he doesn't want to trip, or he doesn't want his visitors to trip. So he has a light on the outside. So apparently, even in terms of the light on the outside, you would lift up that light to get a maximum area lit. And in order to set up a hekera of a Ner Chanukah outside your house, you want to light it lower down. And that's nikar that it's l'shem mitzvah. But again, this doesn't square with the Ner Acheres business. Because then the Mishnah Berurah should have said that even outside you should require a Ner Acheres. That's where I get, you know, ad kan. You know, after that, I need a guide to the perplexed. Then he writes, Ayin el yirab shekosav dohad hein olim nisharim bezeh. Why is it that people light their candles higher than 10 tefachim? They're not careful about that. And the answer is they rely on the Mordechai. The Mordechai writes that now we generally light our candles on the inside. And on the inside, we're not makpid whether it's higher up or lower up. Again, I'm perplexed because even on the inside, you know, you want to make sure that nobody thinks that that you're enjoying the benefit of the candle for your purposes and it's not a ner mitzvah. That's what the Bir Halacha says. The whole requirement of ner acheres was on the inside. And if on the inside you light your candle higher up, then it certainly detracts from the heker. Adarav, but here in the inside, we should be even more careful, requiring that you light the candles on the bottom. And the Mordechai says, Pili Ploim, that when you're lighting your candles on the inside, which again, that was the common mode of lighting in those days, as I said before, today we light on the outside, but those days they lit on the inside. So that we don't have to be careful about up to, but not beyond, not above 10 tefachim. Achein, however, Hatur Sosam was there. Mashma the Svili Dein Lechalik was there. Notice the Torah and the Mechaber make no distinction between whether you're lighting on the outside or on the inside. It seems that the requirement of below 10 tefachim is an absolute requirement that applies in all cases, even if you're lighting on the inside. And again, we would say Kolshkein, if you're lighting on the inside, you need more of that Kero. Vechein Noagim Kolam Adagdikin. So now the Mishnah Berurah gives an accolade, he gives a couple extra brownie points to those who are careful to fulfill the requirement of the Beis Yosef and to light below Asarat Tefachim. Again, that's going to be okay if you live in a private house. But let's say you live in an apartment house and you're above ground level, you're on the second floor, etc. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to light it below 10 tefachim. He says the following. We already saw in the Mechaber that in the case of a person who lives above ground level, he should light in the window. No, if he's lighting in the window, the higher that he lights it, the better. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah points out. And he quotes various poskim here, the Magen Avraham, etc., etc. And they hold that im dar ba'aliyah menicha b'chalon shu litzad rishu sarabim afilu im ha'chalon gavoa yoser me'asar tfachim mikarka aliyah. In other words, let's say you're on the second floor. Should you count 10 tfachim from the floor, meaning floor number 2, and light it low down within 10 tfachim? Says the Magen Avraham, name, that's not what you should do. You're lighting in the window, you want to expand the pirsum hanes of those who are walking on the street, they see it in your window. Don't light it low down. They won't see it if it's low down. If it's in your window, raise it higher. Now, if you take a look in the Shaar HaTziyun, which is also the same author, number Lamed, which starts on the second line in the section of the Shaar HaTziyun on the bottom. Don, are you getting the hang of it? I mean, it's much better than yesterday. You know, now I'm not even bothering telling you where to find things because you know your way around. So after quoting a who's who's list in the poskim, the Magen Avraham, the Elio Rava, the Chayoda, the Prima Godin, he says, Mashma, the Odif Tfei Lahaniach B'chalon HaSomach L'Shesaravim Af Shehi L'Mala Me'asor Tfachim Milanicho B'Tefach HaSomach L'Pesach Af Shu Yochol Lanicho L'Mata Me'asor Tfachim. So you have two choices here. You have to decide which one is preferable. One choice is to light it in a chalon that's very low down and it's within Asor Tfachim in the floor, but it's not Somach L'Shesaravim. No one's going to see it. So you gain the benefit of being madlik below asar tefachim. The other option is to light it in a window, but it's above 10 tefachim, but at least it's somach lishus harabim. He says in the name of the chayodom that you should prefer the latter possibility. You know, let's go ahead and give up on the lamata asar tefachim in order to enhance the lishus harabim element. And he says that the Prima Godim vacillates back and forth on this point, but since the chayodom came to a definite conclusion, this is Rabbi Avraham Danzig. I mean, it's unbelievable how much Yiras HaKavod. You have to understand the history. Now, up until the Mishnah Berurah, all we had was the Chayodom. I mean, the Aruch HaShulchan was publishing his works, but they were never widely accepted. So the Chayodom was like the guru, you know, he was the last word for Ashkenazic Psak. Then the Mishnah Berurah came along and wrote his work. And, you know, he lived under that Yiras HaKavod that they had for the Chayodom. So even though the Prima Godim is not sure what to do in this case, the final word is with the Chayodom. So that's why, Rabosai, when you light at the window, you're not going to ask yourself, well, is it above 10 tefachim or not? You want to get it in a way that it's proudly pronounced. You know, it's pronounced and it's public and it's accessible and it can be viewed by as many people in Rosh Hashanah as possible. Now, how high can you light your Ner Chanukah? We've spoken about how low you should light it, but how high? Is the sky the limit? He says the following. The point of no return is Esrim Amah. So again, L'chatchila, as far as where you should place the candle, the best option would be below Asar Tefach. We said if you light it on the ground, the Evidabach says you Yotze. If you light it above Asar Tefachim, that's also okay. And even might be preferable if you're lighting in the window inside your house. But even though it's okay to light it above 10 Tefachim, but there's no sky's the limit. It cannot be above 20 Amah. You know, here we have a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara says in a number of places, especially with regard to what's called a lechi and a kor of erevin, that a person doesn't usually look, the eye doesn't catch something that's so high up, you know, he has to strain his neck to see all the way up above Esrim Amah. That's why Ischach, which requires Laman Yedu Dorosechem, has to be below Esr Ma'amah. Who's going to see the schach that's 20 amas high? The Torah Tmina is a chiddush that this works in the opposite direction as far as something that's low. Let's say you're looking into a ditch. If something is below Esr Ma'amah, 20 amas plus below sea level, then you're not going to strain your neck to look and see, oh, maybe there's something there below Esr Ma'amah. And the Torah Tmina wants to explain why the Achim, the brothers of Yosef, were guilty of throwing him into a ditch that had Nechashim Vakrafim. He says because the ditch was 20 amal deep, and there were Akravim and Nechashim below 20 amal, but they didn't bother stretching their neck out to look and see what's at the bottom of the ditch. They just saw, oh, yeah, it's okay, it's a dark ditch, it doesn't seem that there are any Nechashim. Had they made that extra effort to stretch their neck out to see below Esr Ma'amah, they would have realized that they're basically bringing about the death of Yosef. The Torah Tmima says that had they known that Yosef would survive if there were Nechashim Akravim, then they would not have thrown him in at all. They would have realized that there's divine protection, supernatural miracles that God is performing to save Yosef HaTzadik. They thought that Yosef was a rodef. Alright, that's not for us now. Now, is this halacha of Esr Ma'amah an absolute halacha that doesn't tolerate any exception? If you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, that's the way he seems to take it. He says, in Chav Ches Einaf Gemina Bein Amadlik Bachutz, Bein Amadlik Babayis. Now this is a real issue for people who live in apartment buildings. I'm not sure exactly if the second floor is already above 20 amos. It probably is, but certainly the third, fourth, fifth. I mean, the shaila I get all the time. This is a question I always get asked. People go abroad, and you know they don't use the elevator on Shabbos, obviously. And in Europe, you're not going to find, or certainly not in the Far East, you're not going to find a Shabbos elevator. And they can't walk up 45 flights. How are they going to go to shul on Shabbos? So you have elevator man. What do you call it?
Yeah, elevator operator.
Oh, operator. Okay, yeah. I'm sure there's a fancier word for it. Anyway, so he'll say, what floor do you want to go up to? And that's a problem called Amir Eliakim Shvus. So this is a classical shaila, very difficult to work this through, because on the one hand, you know, you can't coop the guy up for 24 hours plus in his apartment and or in his hotel room. He's got to get to shul. On the other hand, you know, how do you circumvent the problem of Amir Eliakim Shvus? But now we have the same kind of an issue with regard to Ner Chanukah. The man lives on the 20th floor in a gigantic skyscraper. He's certainly lighting above Esr Ma'amah. And the Mechaber and the Mishnah Berurah following suit don't seem to give any exception to this rule. If you take a look in the Ramah, he also takes this very seriously. He says, Afilu lokha kach dolk. Let's say he lit it below Esr Ma'amah. I'm sorry, he lit it above Esr Ma'amah. And then he lowered it below Esr Ma'amah. Do you follow? Let's say, for example, he lives on the second floor. And the lower part of his floor is within Esr Ma'amah. But the higher part, let's say on a ledge or so, in his living room window, is above Esr Ma'amah. So initially he lit it above Esr Ma'amah. And then he puts it down below Esr Ma'amah. Says the Mechaber, says the Ramah, lo yotza. Why tadlokos a mitzvah? Again, we've seen this principle over and over again. There's no such thing as post-tadloka salvation. And therefore, if at the time of tadloka was above Esr Ma'amah, he's not yotze. So Rabosa and the contemporary poskim have to deal with this issue. There's a lot of literature here about people who live in apartment buildings. In my humble opinion, in such a case, if at all possible, we have to encourage them to fulfill and implement what the Mechaber said earlier, namely that he should light in the Pesach of the Chatzer. And even though there's a common area when you come into the apartment building, and no one's going to know that that's your Ner Chanukah, nevertheless, we paskin like Tosfos, and we want to expand the Pirsum HaNes. But to light in his apartment building above Esrim Amma, I don't know. You know, there are poskim who allow it, but it's you know, you don't get that impression here, neither from the Mechaber, nor from the Rambam, nor from the Mishnah Berurah. None of them have that exception. So the poskim say, well, they didn't live in that reality, you know. So we have a new reality, you know. But still, you know, it's not lo nichale. I mean, it doesn't make me comfortable because there's a rule called lo shulta ba'ena, that above 20 amma is lo shulta ba'ena. So how do you circumvent that problem?
Lamed seems to suggest in the Mishnah Berurah that the opposite would work.
What do you mean by the opposite?
If you light it below Esrim Amma, and then you can lift it up.
Right.
That seems to work.
Right, because we pass in Adlokos and Mitzvah. Again, I wouldn't encourage doing such a thing. There's no logical, compelling reason to do so, but it could be done. Okay, Rabbi Osai, so we'll stop here and...